You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I spoke to Justin Hotchkiss 2 weeks ago about the implications of his work on eumelanin and the world first that the co-director of the McDermott Institute and his research team have achieved in understanding how eumelanin works. On Tomorrow's World this week, Isla and I were keen to get into the nitty-gritty science of this fascinating discovery.
The endless parade of time. Who can say what fruits the future will see ripen? We can only keep looking towards
Tomorrow's World with Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins on 95BFM.
UV photons are really damaging because each photon contains quite a lot of energy, enough energy that when they're absorbed by tissue, by proteins, by DNA, they have enough energy to essentially tear electrons out from molecules. And when one electron is ripped out of a molecule, you have radicals. And these reactions are very reactive, so they can form new bonds uncontrollably, break other bonds. So yeah, a lot of quite damaging things happen, and it all comes back to UV photons having a lot more energy than visible photons, for example, and that's enough energy to tear electrons out.
So how do they damage the protective layers on objects? So for skin, as you just talked about, they produce free radicals and change structures of DNA and other materials, but what's going on in things like paint, for example, when UV damages it?
Yeah, it's a similar thing. I mean, the materials and molecules are different, but it's generally radical reactions where, you know, electrons are pulled out, inducing bonds to break and new bonds to form. So, you know, when bonds break, materials change. And when new bonds form, again, that changes the colour, the properties.
So your group has discovered insights into how eumelanin works. Is the structure of eumelanin important in that two-step reaction? And could you describe the process of that reaction?
Yeah, so we discovered a two-step reaction that happens on the femtosecond to picosecond timescale. So that's down in kind of millionths of a billionth of a second. Now, the first step, which happens within 100 femtoseconds, a molecule absorbs a photon, and then it shares that energy around within its neighboring molecules. And this really benefits from eumelanin having a very disordered structure, with having lots of different types of molecules in close proximity, close enough to share this energy and kind of pass it around like a hot potato, if you like. The second step, which proceeds after that, is a reaction that we call excited state proton transfer. And it basically means that in the so-called excited state, the molecule loses a proton. There's actually nothing special about that reaction. It doesn't ultimately do anything. Like, after it's lost this proton, it just comes back from the solvent. But what it's doing is it's really acting as a circuit breaker. Like, this is basically just a way of wasting a lot of energy really quickly. It's really just rapidly deactivating this highly energetic excited state before it can do anything damaging. So that's the key, that it just has to be that fast, because otherwise bad things will happen.
The rapid time scale has obviously been a barrier to people understanding how eumelanin works in the past. How does the equipment work that allowed you to visualize that two-step reaction?
Yeah, so you're right. We had to devise ways of seeing things happening on that time scale, on the femtosecond to picosecond time scale. So what we use are ultra-fast lasers, or femtosecond lasers. And these are lasers that, instead of just having a continuous beam of light, it has light and pulses that are femtoseconds long. And then we can, I would describe what we do as a little bit like strobe photography. If you can imagine, earlier strobe photographs were like a bullet going through an apple or something, where you can capture something happening really quickly if you've got a short flash of light. We're doing something similar with much shorter flashes of light. We're not actually taking photographs. We're taking spectra, where we kind of measure the absorption or fluorescence. But as long as our pulses of light are really fast, then we can capture things happening on that timescale. So, for example, what we do is we have sequences of pulses where we might start with a UV pulse that is kind of mimicking UV excitation from the sun. And then it femtoseconds, picoseconds after that, we would have another pulse that might measure the absorption, or it measures the so-called Raman vibrational spectrum, or even measures the fluorescence of the molecule. And we needed to kind of combine these methods in order to build a full picture of the excited states and the way that they relax structurally.
So that was obviously a big challenge, getting the visualization first, but then in your analysis of the experiments, the PhD students use computational models for simulation. Could you explain for people who aren't involved in research what the benefit of simulation is and what kind of new insights it brings?
Yeah, really great question. So when we do these measurements, particularly on such a complex and disordered material, it's quite hard to interpret the results and to tell what you're really looking at. We measure spectra, and you want to be able to assign the spectra, say, you know, this peak is from this, and it's converting into this other peak, which must be something else. So in our case, we wanted to establish clear signatures associated with this proton transfer mechanism. Given that melanin is not a discrete molecule, it's a very disordered biopolymer it's actually got quite a random structure. So we had to break it down into building blocks, and we had to predict what these signatures of proton transfer would look like. So we use quite established techniques of quantum chemistry, where we can kind of input the molecular building blocks into the computer. We can calculate the, for example, the vibrational spectrum is something that was quite indicative of what we were looking at. So the vibrational spectrum changes a lot in this process of proton transfer. So we could calculate from first principles the what the vibrational spectrum looks like before and after, and we could map those peaks onto what we actually found. So it really enabled us to say quite definitively that this process happening in 4 picoseconds must be due to excited state proton transfer. So that was really one of the key advantages of complementing our experiments with calculations.
So finally, could we potentially mimic the structure of eumelanin in things like sunscreen, for example, to protect us additionally against UV photons? And what might be the process for that?
Yeah, great question. And this is something that we're thinking hard about now. Something that we believe is that really all of the key stuff that melanin does to protect from UV light, the fact that melanin is brown is not essential to its function for UV protection. If we are able to make a UV filter for sunscreen or for coatings for paint, for example, we could replicate the same mechanism without it needing to be colored brown. Like I don't think that that there would be much market for new paints that are the color of a suntan, and even sunscreens, you know, people don't really want to look like they're wearing spray tan all the time necessarily. Yeah, we believe that the key features of the mechanism, that is having molecules packed together in a certain way to share the excitation, and then having the possibility of doing excited state proton transfer. The key elements of that are present in a lot of biological materials. And so we can imagine putting together some natural product extracts in a way that requires minimal, if any, kind of chemical processing to create something that is a UV filter that in a very sustainable process. So that's really what we're trying to do now and what we're thinking about. And we can apply all of the same methods that we've developed experimentally and computationally to kind of test our ideas on the kind of minimal viable natural products.
Looks like everything's going to be all right.
Tomorrow's World with Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins on 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.